Tonight's play is a sequel to that broadcast last week in Saturday Night Theatre. We present Anna Cropper and John Bennett in The Night of Caesar's Knives by William Keenan. The Night of Caesar's Knives.
This is what I'm happy to call home.
What a lovely big house.
It's been in the family since my father started the firm of Haywood Textiles.
What a wonderful stained glass window in the vestibule.
I'm glad you like it, Mrs. Haywood. I had wondered if you prefer a new house, complete with all mod cons and central heating.
No, this is marvellous. Thank you, darling.
What for?
For marrying your adoring secretary. Our honeymoon. Our home.
No regrets, then?
Well, after a whole month of bliss in the Harz Mountains, I'm just a little disappointed that I haven't conceived.
Hey, give us time, Doris, give us time.
We haven't got all that much time. Neither of us is in the first flush of youth, and the sooner we start our family, the better.
Well, I can only say I will do my utmost to oblige. Ouch! Hey, that was a foul! Elbow in the ribs.
You see what's going to happen if you're sarcastic with me. As your secretary, I had to take it. As your wife, I'll bash you in the ribs.
And I thought I'd married a dear little woman who would have my meals and slippers ready and announce with due dignity to the whole household at the ring of the doorbell, Papa is home.
Let us all gather round to make him happy and comfortable.
And why not? I have all the makings of a perfect chauvinistic male. But on this occasion... If Madam would care to remain seated, her chauffeur will open the door for her.
Thank you, James.
The name is Michael, Madam. Would you give me your hand, Madam, so that I can help you out?
My hand, Michael? Such old-world courtesy. Ah! Put me down, Mike! Put me down!
I'm carrying you over the threshold.
Oh, not over your shoulder. My mother will see us. Aunt Claire will see it. Mike, put me down.
I don't care who the hell sees us. Oh.
Aunt Claire, we've returned.
Indeed you have, and you look happy enough. If I were you, Michael, I'd keep her over my shoulder and take her up to her mother's room. Oh, it's very good of you to have us both come to live here.
All part of the marriage settlement, Aunt Claire. Anyway, it's a big lonely house. We couldn't leave Doris's invalid mother on her own. And somebody's got to protect you from that KGB colonel, Uncle Balake.
Oh, I think the less said about him, the better. And Doris, while on that subject, I don't think we ought to let your mother know what happened in Germany. That your fine husband gets himself involved with British intelligence.
I was merely looking for an old friend.
Who just happened to be one of their missing agents.
All right, so they use my cover as a British businessman.
Used is the operative word. They used us all.
Oh, by the way, Robson, head of the German section, offered me a job in intelligence.
I hope you refused.
Of course.
But you were tempted.
Well, when I just married a comely wife, I'd hate to be chasing around foreign parts.
I wonder if they've got your name on file now. Haywood Michael, textile exporter, brackets. Trustworthy and unafraid, end brackets.
I wouldn't put anything past that lot. And before I answer the phone, let me just wish for the both of you that the Lord will send his blessings on your union and that you may live happily in this house and see your children's children. Oh, a lovely blessing, I always think.
Thank you, Aunt Claire. But the telephone...
Let's not answer it.
Well, it may be Claire's Russian boyfriend ringing all the way from Moscow.
Heavens above! A Russian bear of a man passes the time of day with me, and you've the nerve to insinuate that I'm interested in him. What would a respectable Irish widow see in a pagan fellow like him? Though I must admit he has some human virtue.
But a few more like friend Balakev, the KGB will almost have a respectable image.
I think he fancied you, Aunt Claire.
I'd be having none of that impertinence from you, young lady. And I don't want the colonel mentioned to your mother.
Oh, I'd best answer that thing. 4392635. Yes, this is Mr. Haywood's residence.
Oh, here we go.
Well, I just see if he's at home. Oh, who's calling? Renshaw with an E.
Oh, do you know anybody called Renshaw?
Not on hand.
Hold on.
I have a feeling it's them again.
I'll not keep you a moment.
Them?
The intelligence people. Tell Aunt Claire to say we haven't arrived back yet.
You'll only ring again. I'll take it, Claire.
Oh, one moment. Mr. Haywood's here now.
Hello, Haywood.
My name is Renshaw, Tom Renshaw. We have a mutual friend, James Robson. He's in our Continental section.
The German agency?
Yes, the German branch office.
Well, I don't think I wish to do any more business with our mutual friend, so you can save yourself further phone calls. Good day.
Mr. Haywood, you don't know yet what our offer is. It's a second honeymoon for you and your wife.
No, what's the catch?
None whatever. Just want to say thank you for your assistance in Germany. A holiday on the department.
It's them right enough, Doris. They just want to say thank you by sending us on a second honeymoon.
They're trying to involve you again.
That's what I think.
Let me have a word with him. I'll put him off. Hello. This is Mrs. Haywood speaking.
It really is
most kind of you, Mr. Renshaw, with an E, but we've only this minute just returned from our honeymoon, so under the circumstances,
You sound like a happy bride, Mrs. Haywood, and after all your husband went through...
Well, it is very, very kind of you to offer, but we couldn't possibly accept without my Aunt Claire coming with us, and without a full-time companion for my invalid mother, but thank you all the same.
I'm sure we can give you the extra facilities.
You can?
The third ticket will be awaiting you at Manchester Airport. In fact, you can have seats on tomorrow's flight. An agency will send a qualified nursing companion for you to interview within the hour, Mrs. Hale.
But I'll have to speak with my husband. He's offering us flights tomorrow for you, me, and Aunt Claire. And there'll be someone to look after Mother.
An offer you can't refuse?
But, Mike...
Oh, and whilst you're making all the decisions, you might ask him where they booked for our second honeymoon.
What flight are we booked on, Mr. Renshaw?
The Rome flight.
Rome?
The Eternal City, Mrs. Haywood. So perfect for a honeymoon. At 10:30 a.m., flight BE...
759. Oh, I was half hoping we'd miss it.
I wondered why you took so long packing. Ah, where's Renshaw?
Good morning to you. I have the tickets, and if you'll just let me have your baggage, I'll try to expedite matters.
How well organized you are, Renshaw. Now, if you ladies will go ahead, we'll bring the hand luggage.
Oh, thank you, Michael. I'll keep me hold, Doris. I need cards and such like. I've got magazines.
Well, Renshaw, now you can tell me what this honeymoon really entails.
The department is simply providing a second honeymoon for yourself and your good wife. Let's say certain parties were very pleased with what you accomplished in Germany. We found our agent. And your cover as a textile merchant was impeccable.
Because that's what I am. A textile merchant. Even if I am tricked into helping the department whilst on a perfectly legitimate business trip.
Of course.
Be that as it may, I'm not so naive to believe that a man like Robson is doing this out of the kindness of his heart.
I don't think we need bring personalities into this. Though now you mention it, there is just a small favor you might do.
How did I guess? It is for the department. I never for a moment thought it would be for the National Health Service, but run down though it may be.
There's no danger involved, just a relaxing few weeks in Rome doing as you please. Not the way you were involved in Germany.
You mean I'm not a clay pigeon this time?
All we want you to do is keep an eye on someone in the same line of business as yourself. A cotton manufacturer called Gerald Picton.
Picton Mills, Framwell?
Yes.
Oh, what's he doing? Selling red banners to China?
It's just that we'd like to know where he goes and who he meets. We don't want you to go around tracking him, but just keep an eye on him occasionally. There'll be a check at the end of it. What could be easier?
Sounds as simple as dying.
All you've got to do is make Picton's acquaintance. Haywood.
Gerald Picton. What are you doing on your way to Rome?
After some sunshine. You appear to be occupying our seats, old boy.
Oh, I'm terribly sorry, Gerald. So we are. We're further along.
Oh, no, stay. My secretary, Jean, prefers to be by the window. By the way, I heard you just got married.
Yes, second honeymoon. My wife, Doris.
Hello.
And Mrs. Claire O'Connell.
How do you do?
Hello there.
And this is my secretary, Jean Tyler, and a Swedish friend of mine, Sven Bast.
How do you do? Pleased to meet you, Mr. Haywood. Mrs. Haywood?
Look, we must have a get-together in Rome.
Good idea. See you in Rome.
I'm glad we decided to share a taxi. You know, Hayward, I feel I live more dangerously riding around Rome in these things than I do driving my racing car full out.
You've had rather a good season.
I picked up a few trophies on one or two circuits. Now, how well do you know Rome?
Not very well. You can be our guide.
May I say you've made an excellent choice. I come here regularly. We're now outside the walls of the city of ancient Rome. Those bells we just heard are from the Church of St. Paul's.
Now, I'd love to see inside that church, Mr. Picton, so I would.
Unfortunately, Mrs. O'Connell, the little painting shop I was telling Hayward about is in the opposite direction.
I was hoping our guide to Rome would show us St. Peter's and not a shop in a back street.
Will you look at those Latin drivers, Doris? Taking that bend without slowing down. As for that one... And I not believe my eyes.
Oh, yes, Aunt Claire, what is it?
I thought I saw...
Yes?
Oh, it must be my imagination playing tricks with me.
You look a little pale, Mrs. O'Connell.
Just a little exhausted with the heat, Mr. Bass.
Well, then at the next cafe, you must sit down and have a cool drink with me whilst the others visit the modern art shop. And please, call Miss Van. I will show you St. Peter's, for I know Rome well. I live here.
Ah, buongiorno, Mr. Picton. Very well, are you?
Fine, Enzo, fine. I've been telling my friends of the excellent pictures you sell.
Oh, it's very kind, signore. What can I show you on this visit?
Have you any more pictures by the artist who always paints a cat in the corner?
Ghetto. That is the name for cat. And that is the name the artist goes by.
You don't happen to know his real name?
Ah, no, signore. A friend brings his painting, and I pay what Gatto asks. He is becoming... how do you say in English? Everybody want him.
Much sought of. Fashionable.
Ah, si, si. Now, I have one here. A view of Rome and the Tiber. How does that strike you?
Oh, that's absolutely marvellous. Don't you think so, Hayward?
It's quite colourful. A liberal amount of paint used.
Well, you can feel the warmth of the sun. And look at those dark, mysterious shadows. There's depth, dimension.
It has something about it, Mike. You can buy it for me if it isn't too expensive. A memento of our second honeymoon.
Sorry to disappoint you, Mrs. Hayward, but I'm buying this one.
Oh, forgive us, Gerald. We hadn't realized that you were interested.
I buy all Gatto. I've instructed Enzo here to get me all he can.
But this one was in the window.
It would still not be for sale unless I did not want it. Isn't that correct, Enzo?
That is so, Mr. Picton. I will have it delivered to your hotel. The Colony Flaminia, as usual.
It is. I'll be in again to argue the price and see what else you've got, Enzo.
Well, I'm not an art expert, but I thought Gatto's view of Rome and the Tiber...
Looked like hastily, out of perspective, botched-up painting. Here's your bathrobe. Or have I put it too strongly?
Well, on the right of the painting was, I suppose, the crenelle. The king's palace looked in a twist.
Skew whip, awry, and slanting.
So you noticed it.
I'm noticing you, too, in your bathrobe. Fresh, flushed, inviting.
We're going to miss dinner.
Who cares?
They're expecting us, Picton, his secretary and Aunt Claire. They wonder why we haven't gone down.
Let them wonder.
No, Mike Hayward. We really should be going down to dinner. Mm. Will you stop kissing me whilst I'm trying to talk to you? And stop!
Blast!
Who could it be?
Oh, it may stop ringing. Oh, I suppose we better answer. Room 178?
Is that you, Hayward?
Yes.
Van Bast here. Have you eaten?
No. We were wondering whether to have something sent up to our room.
Oh, I have a better idea. Come to my apartment. I have a wonderful meal waiting for you. Via della Consolidazione, number 23. It's only a few minutes by taxi from your hotel at this time of night.
It's very kind of you, but we are rather tired. Not used to the Roman sunshine, you know.
Oh, that I cannot believe, Heywood. Only mad dogs and Englishmen go out in the midday sun, no? You are a robust race. I am sure a little sunshine has not made you too tired to appreciate a superb Italian meal.
I'm sorry, but...
But nothing, Heywood. You must come. We have something to discuss.
Have we?
I want to hear about Germany. I understand you were working for British intelligence. If not working, then hotel, Ping. Am I correct?
Oh, and who told you that?
If you would like to know, why not come and have dinner? There are other interesting things I wish to speak with you about.
I'll come alone.
And leave your newly wedded wife in the hotel? Oh, how ungallant, Heywood. No, the invitation is to both of you. 23 Via della Conciliazione, Heywood.
It appears we have a dining out engagement.
You're trying to be casual, which makes me suspect that you're worried. Isn't it about time you tell me what friends you had to say at the airport this morning? You seem to go into a conspiratorial huddle.
Was it so obvious?
Well, not to most people, but to your wife and former secretary, it was obvious you were cooking something up between you.
Well, our second honeymoon offer has a small print clause.
I'd have been amazed if it hadn't. Well?
I had to keep an eye on Picton.
Whatever for?
Renshaw didn't say. And if I'd insisted on an explanation, it would only have been a pack of lies.
Well, so who rang us up to invite us out to dinner?
Sven Best.
He was quite charming to Aunt Claire this afternoon. I think at one stage he was trying to get her on her own.
Was he now?
Don't make it sound so sinister.
Well, this isn't purely a social invitation. You see, Sven Best knows what we were doing in Germany.
So, this is the Via della Conciliazione. Let's pretend we're two young lovers.
23 is the next one.
Oh, well. Ah, that looks like the bell. I rather fancy you should sing as you press.
We must probably get a bucket of water thrown over us. I think someone's coming now. No? Must have been imagining things.
I thought I heard something then.
Instead of footsteps, or whatever they were, carrying on, they've stopped abruptly.
That was my impression, too. Mike?
Yes, what is it?
The key's there. It's been left in the lock.
Must have forgotten to take it out. Or he might have left it there for us.
It could also have been left in by someone who is too much in a hurry.
Somebody we might have disturbed? Now, let's see if it's the right key.
I would prefer the gentleman to go first on this occasion.
Well, we agreed till death us do part. Ah, a marble hall. Dark and cool at midday.
But too dark, eerie, and cold for late evening.
Seems to be a light coming from the room on the far right. Mr. Bass? Mr. Bass? Anyone home?
I think we ought to leave it for another time. He must have been suddenly been called away.
Well, he would have rung us.
He might have done that and found we'd already left the hotel.
Then he would have waited for us. The speed our taxi driver travelled, he would have been lucky to be out of the house before we arrived. I think I'd better take a look. Well, take a look at this.
What is it?
A table laid for a banquet.
Meats, roasts, cold chickens and sauces. A mountain of fruit. Wine. Like an ancient Roman banquet. And our Swedish gentleman Sven Bast does himself well. Let's toast to absent friends and then dig in.
Doris?
Do you think he's trying to scare us in some way?
I don't know what to make of it.
Is there a cellar under the house?
I'm going to take a look.
Well, don't leave me in this room. There's a distinct smell of cigar smoke. Someone's been here and recently.
If I could find the lights of the hall. Oh, there's something here. Well, that seems to be the switch, but nothing happens.
I think the lights are on the marble pillars, Mike. Those flaming torch things.
No, Doris, stay where you are. There's a body with a wire around its neck, hanging from the light bracket.
Oh, I think I'm going to faint. Mike, come back, please.
It's Sven Best. Yeah, I'm going to get him down. He might still be alive.
Well?
He's quite dead. One shoe's untied and has come off.
Oh, Mike. Let's get away from here, please, Mike.
Wait. There's something inside the shoe. Canvas. A torn strip of canvas.
Let's get away while we can. We must call the police.
Someone seems to have already called them.
Mm-hmm. Mr. and Mrs. Haywood. I followed you out on a later plane.
Renshaw, I ought to strangle you.
But I brought red roses and champagne.
The roses are lovely, though.
I thought as we were in Rome, perhaps the Italian version of champagne. Excellent year.
Doris, a glass for you. Heywood.
Thanks. And I've just the toast for the occasion. May we not rot long in an Italian jail.
Why, what's the matter?
Or perhaps we should drink to the memory of Sven Bast.
Sven Bast is a Swede in Picton's body.
Yes. May he rest in peace.
And that's how we found him.
Strangled by a wire.
You say he rang you and said he knew about Germany?
Yes.
But how could he?
I don't know.
The police will soon trace you through the taxi driver. Why did you run out of the rear cellar door?
Why? Because I didn't want to spend my first night of my Rome honeymoon explaining to the Italian police how I came to find the body. I also thought I might catch a glimpse of the person who had left the place that same way shortly before us.
And did you?
No.
You say you let down the body.
Yes. There might have been a glimmer of life left, for all I knew. I had to see.
Quite. But in the process, you would have left your fingerprints on the wire and perhaps the marble pillar. And then again, it would already have been on the door handle and key. And you, Doris, did you touch anything?
Spoon, one or two silver dish covers.
Yes, so they'll trace you to this hotel via the taxi driver and then match both sets of fingerprints. Well, we could fly you out of Rome, but that would convince the police you killed him and they could apply for an extradition warrant.
Some second honeymoon.
Which, in turn, would lead to awkward questions in the house. It looks, Haywood, as if you'll have to stay.
In this bridal suite? Or in jail?
Depends how much of your story the Italian police choose to believe. But we'll do all we can for you, won't we?
What about his old woman?
Ah. When it comes to affairs of the heart, these Italians are very understanding. I'm sure they'll put you in a cell together. Love in a hut with water and a crust. Anyway, what are you worried about? Contrary to general opinion, I believe marriages thrive on hardship. It's when the couple becomes affluent the troubles start.
Who are you ringing?
I'm doing what every upright British citizen would do after discovering a crime. Informing the police.
They contacted the consulate and the consul asked me to assist in the matter. They are on honeymoon and were invited by Mr. Bast. They found him dead and panicked, not knowing what to do.
But they knew enough to ring the consulate for assistance. These are the two?
Yes. No, forgive me. Mr. and Mrs. Haywood, this is Captain Averno of the Rome Police.
You had a very disturbing experience, I understand.
Very disturbing, to say the least.
And how did you come to know Mr. Bast?
They traveled on the same plane. Sven Bast was in the company of a friend of Haywood's.
Please, let Mr. Haywood answer the questions. Is that correct, Mr. Haywood?
Yes.
And who was this mutual friend, Mr. Haywood?
Mr. Picton. We're in the same line of business, textiles.
And that is how you come to know him?
Yes.
Did he come with you to Roma?
Yes, he's staying at this hotel.
And that is convenient for us all, isn't it? But let us talk about tonight. Mr. Bast rang you and invited you to dinner. You went along and found him dead. How did you get in?
The key was in the door.
You let yourself in?
We waited and...
And you unlocked the door and walked inside?
Yes.
You're not a timid man then, Mr. Haywood?
I suppose not.
You had the nerve to walk into a strange house, but when you find the horse dead, you suddenly turn into a frightened rabbit and run. Surely it would have been easier to stay.
I realize now we should have done that. Instead, we rang the British consul.
3.5 hours later, Signor.
We walked back.
That you took a taxi to get there. Why didn't you call a taxi to take you back to the hotel or to a consul official? Was it that you were trying to be inconspicuous?
Perhaps that was in our minds. We're also not used to the Italian phone.
But you managed to call the consul? What number did you ring that time of night?
We have a night number in the book, Captain.
Please, Mr. Renshaw. You are quite capable of answering such simple questions.
Perhaps it was my being with him, Captain Averno. My husband was afraid for me. He's very protective.
Of course, Signora. I understand now.
In such circumstances, a husband would want to spare his wife distress and discomfort.
Yes, you're very kind and understanding, Captain.
And I will commend your handling of this unfortunate affair in my report, Captain.
Pray, Prosecutor. But I would like Mr. and Mrs. Haywood to remain in Roma until investigations are complete. And there may be other questions to be answered.
Of course.
Good night, Signora. Signor.
Well, that wasn't too painful, was it? You handled it quite well, Haywood. Now the piece of gum, we'll take a look at that canvas strip of painting you found. Under the cat, there is a word. Tiber.
Yes, it's a view of the Tiber.
No, the word is not Tiber.
You sure?
Yes, quite sure. After the R. No, there are more letters, and they're clear and distinct. I-U-S.
Tiberius.
Tiberius Caesar. What do you know of him?
He retired to Capri, indulged in sexual extravagances, together with every sort of cruelty. He used to strangle his victims. Their children as well, if I remember my history correctly.
Did you say strangle?
Yes, Doris. I wonder, could there be a connection between strangling Sven Bast and the name Tiberius?
I was wondering the same thing. I was also remembering a rhyme written about him. It went, "You cruel monster, I'll be damned I will if even your own mother loves you still."
But Tiberius has been dead many a long year.
A.D. 37.
You must have a very good memory for dates, Renshaw.
I have, as a matter of fact.
Well, do I get the impression you've been reading up on Tiberius?
By chance, I have been doing a little research on that period.
By chance?
I also read classics at Oxford, Haywood.
And you've been carrying the date of Tiberius's death around with you since your happy student days. Well, well.
My memory was refreshed by my recent research.
How convenient. How timely.
Isn't it? Well, I must not interrupt the honeymoon. I'll be around, and anything you find out, I shall pass back to London. On my way out, I'll have another bottle of wine sent up. Good night.
You could cheerfully strangle Renshaw. He was too quick to spot the name Tiberius. Could be some kind of code.
I hardly think it was the signature of the Emperor Tiberius. The paint would have had time to dry in 1900-odd years.
Was the paint wet?
Well, no. But it looked like it hadn't been dry for very long.
Doris, I'm glad I married a wife who can detect such details.
And has the ability to climb over a wall-crane vine after rushing out of the back doors of Roman cellars as the police enter the house by the front door.
Which goes to show that being a wife can be more interesting than going out to work as a secretary. Scared?
Well, since you've asked, I think that once again we are deliberately being drawn into things, and the people involving us know far more about what's going on than they're prepared to say.
I would agree with that assessment.
Then why don't we get out?
Well, you heard Captain Averna. We have to remain.
It could take months.
Then we'll have a prolonged honeymoon at the expense of the British taxpayer. No wonder Parliament is not allowed to study their account estimates.
What about Aunt Claire?
Well, no reason for her to worry.
Aunt Claire? Good grief.
What about Aunt Claire?
Well, she's been wondering what happened to us. She was expecting us down to dinner. We went out without leaving a word.
Well, she presumed we had an early night.
But suppose she rang the suite and found no answer. She'd be worried. Oh, I'll give her a ring.
But this time? It's 2:09 in the morning.
If Aunt Claire has been worrying, I'm quite sure she'll prefer to know we're back safe and sound, then at least she can sleep peacefully.
But you might waken her out of a deep sleep.
A deep, uneasy sleep. It will only waken her up for a couple of minutes, and then she can return to her slumbers. 1-7-9.
Make sure you dial the right number.
I have done.
That's probably your aunt at the door now. Come in.
Mr. Renshaw ordered wine for you.
Such a thoughtful person. I'll just leave it there.
Do you wish me to serve the wine?
No, thanks. We'll manage.
Very good, sir.
It's funny. There's no reply.
So, she's in the sleep of the just.
She must hear the phone.
Even if she's taken a sleeping pill?
Aunt Claire does not take sleeping pills or any other pills, for your information.
Good for her.
Oh, don't be so frivolous, Mike. We should have told her where we were going.
Good job we didn't, as it turned out. Look, I'll ring reception and see if she's changed rooms. Or if that's the right number.
Well, thank you for a sensible suggestion for once.
Reception.
Ah, Haywood, 178 here. Could you tell me if Mrs. Clara Connell is still in room 179?
I see. One moment, please. The key is here, so she has not come back yet.
Not come back? Do you know where she went?
No, signore. There was a call for her about an hour after you left. She must have gone out immediately afterwards.
Did the caller leave a name?
No, signore, no name. He asked for Mrs. Clara Connell, and we had her paged. That is why I remember so clearly. The gentleman spoke English, but I'm sure he was not an Englishman.
More coffee?
No, thanks.
Oh, I know what it's going to be like waiting up for our teenage daughters.
Your Aunt Claire saw something that gave her quite a shock this afternoon.
Yesterday afternoon, now. Oh, shouldn't we call the police or Renshaw?
I think I'll check her room first. Empty.
They're mighty all laid out on the bed. I'll just check the bathroom. No.
She left the balcony window open.
Mike! There's someone out there.
Stand back.
Look out! Mike!
Oh, that hurts.
I'm only bathing your head with cotton wool and warm water.
I remember rushing through the French window.
Well, his first blow missed and shattered the glass.
Some noise of it made me hesitate.
And that's when he hit you. He caught you once in the stomach and then on the head, knocking you back into the room.
Did he only hit me twice? Or the hotel had fallen in on me?
Well, they look like karate blows. You've a terrible bruise on the left side of your head.
What happened to our visitor?
He had a rope fastened to the balustrade of the balcony, and he let himself down the side of the wall. But he dropped this.
Let me see. Book matches. Chat Noir. That's the name of the nightclub. And a black cat. Like the one on the painting.
A replica, you might say. But look on the back.
A coin portrait of a Roman emperor.
And if my convent Latin is correct, the inscription records heir of the deified Augustus Tiberius.
Below is the reverse side, presumably. Tiberius triumphant riding in his chariot. But what has the long-dead Tiberius to do with the Rome of today? And British intelligence?
There's someone at the door.
Hey, switch off the light.
So, good night, my Irish lady. You see, comrade Boris Balakiev is a gentleman and escorts Claire O'Connell to the very door of her home.
And that's as far as you will escort me, comrade Balakiev. Atheism and moral decline go together, and I have none of either. Good night to you.
Aunt Claire!
Balakiev!
We've been worried to death, Aunt Claire. Where have you been?
I thought I'd seen a ghost this afternoon. I never expected to find the KGB in Rome. But it must have been Colonel Balakiev I saw, because after dinner, the phone rang and it was the heathen himself.
A trade union delegation was having a reception. I thought an Irish representative was called for, and after seeing your aunt...
How did you know where she was staying?
I had her followed.
By a member of your trade delegation, no doubt.
Good lady, some of your virtues are rubbing off on me. It was one of my men. There, I speak the truth and feel good.
What are you doing in Rome, Colonel?
I am a member of a trade union delegation.
Fostering goodwill?
You might call it that.
You're not studying ancient history at the same time.
Ah, the Caesars.
One particular Caesar. His system of government allowed for no rivals. He was a fine example of a totalitarian ruler. Which goes to show how history repeats itself. Continually.
You English, you think that your two-party system is the answer to the world's problems. But ancient Rome had two parties also.
So you think it was better under the rule of the Caesars?
Benevolent dictatorship is the most efficient form of government. But how often are dictators benevolent? After Augustus came Tiberius.
Would
fair to assume that you do not approve of the doings of Tiberius, then, Colonel Balakov?
You would be correct to make such an assumption. You could also say that I disapprove of all things done under the name of Tiberius at all times. But I have kept Mrs. O'Connell out late. And so, my good Irish lady, when you pray those beads tonight, say one for me.
And how would you be knowing that I always say my rosary before getting into bed?
In these days of electronic devices, nothing seems sacred. Don't forget, just one offered for me, Claire O'Connell.
You'll need more than one, Colonel Balakir.
With that, I would not disagree.
Well, I'd keep you in mind.
Well, who knows? I could be eternally grateful. In my line of business, it's so difficult getting insurance for this world, never mind for the hereafter.
Oh, it's quite a hectic day.
The understatement of our honeymoon.
Hey, move over. Make room for your bruised and battered husband.
Oh, you really do look badly bruised.
Ah, but you are fair and you are comely.
Isn't the quotation black and comely, darling?
I really have no colour prejudices in the matter, Doris. Oh. But why the hell do we have to have a room and a phone? We'll tear the damn thing from its socket.
Well, the dominant male. Well, go on, then. Throw it out through the window.
Oh, have somebody knocking at the door. Ugh. Hello.
Don't burst my eardrums, old boy.
Renshaw? I'll burst more than your eardrums. Do you know what time it is?
If it's very important, I wouldn't have rung.
Look, tell me at breakfast.
Can't do that, old man.
Why not?
You could both be in danger. If I were you, I'd get out of bed without switching on the light and go over to the door. When you hear four knocks, da da da, it'll be me. But I would advise you still to make sure.
Oh, who is it? Do hang up or your fair and comely wife will be fast asleep.
It's Renshaw. Hello? He says we're in danger.
Oh, hey, again.
Hello, are you there?
Doris, wake up.
I wouldn't bother too much about waking Doris. I'd make for the door. You see, I slipped a little something into that glass of wine I gave her earlier on. Now, wait by the door.
Who is it?
Renshaw. With an E.
Enter, Renshaw, with me. And you better have a good explanation for drugging my wife's drink.
We have to get out of here. Others know you're working for us, so we want to keep you nice and safe for a few days. I thought if Doris were asleep, it would be easier, not as emotionally disturbing.
Renshaw, I promise you I'm going to break your neck one of these days and toss you in the Tiber.
Silly on, old boy, only doing my job. Can you put a coat on your wife or something? I'll give you a hand getting her to the car.
Good evening, Haywood.
And what brings James Robson, head of the German branch office, to Rome?
I say, what's the matter with Doris?
Renshaw drugged her.
Hmm. Yes, Renshaw does enjoy the cloak and dagger stuff, but the drug is only of short duration. A stiff brandy should wake up the sleeping beauty. You may wait in the car, Renshaw, but I...
It may seem trivial and mundane to you, Robson, but men don't like having their wives drugged.
Quite so. I will have words with Renshaw.
You seem well acquainted with the drug used. Are you sure he wasn't doing it on your instructions?
My dear fellow, do you think I would give such an order?
Yes.
Yes, well, I'll pour your wife a brandy. And for you, Haywood, I have an excellent local wine.
Not drugged, I trust.
Now, why should I drug you when we're all going to a party?
A party?
Yes. Now, just wet your wife's lips with this brandy, Haywood, and it should do the trick.
Oh, darling.
You see, Haywood, no ill effects whatsoever.
Wake up, Doris. We're going to a party.
Table for four, please.
No, three. Mr. Robson will not
rejoin
us.
Why is that?
He's not one for going out in the early hours.
You mean he doesn't like to present the opposition with an easy target?
Perhaps.
Four at three, signore.
Thank you. Waiter, could I have a packet of your special matches? I believe you have some with a portrait of Tiberius Caesar.
Oh, I am afraid not, sir. They have all been sold.
we did not have very many of them.
Well, isn't that rather costly, having a specially designed book match for the club and then only selling a few of them? I was thinking of the printing costs, for example.
I will pass on your comments to the manager, sir.
Yes, why not?
Who's giving the party over there?
Oh, he's another Englishman, sir. Mr. Picton.
Picton?
Is someone taking my name in vain? Hayward, what are you doing here? I never expected to see you painted the town red on your second honeymoon. But I'd have invited you. Come on, join us.
Doris, you can plug your nose in.
Oh, I'm rather sleepy.
You know my secretary, Jean. That's her next to the hefty fella.
Yes, we met on the plane, but...
What's the matter?
Well, the man she's with, I feel I've seen him before.
Oh, he's an American, Harry Carlton.
Does he live in Rome?
Yes, buys and sells antiques.
Oh, and is he interested in paintings too?
Carlton, he's interested in everything. But come and join us.
Waiter, scotch on the rocks. Big ones this time.
Harry, haven't you had enough?
The short answer is no.
Harry, you'll have to be more sociable. We have three more guests. Mr. and Mrs. Hayward, friends of mine from England, and...
Renshaw, with an E at the end. Tom Renshaw.
Well, come and have a drink, Tom.
Don't mind if I do.
Hell, where's the scotch?
Patience, Harry. You've only just ordered.
Yes, Harry, you're making a spectacle of yourself.
So what? Who cares?
I care, Harry.
Jean, for goodness sake, what is there to get all head up about?
The amount you're drinking. This is the last one. Understand?
Dames.
And don't call me a dame.
Okay, Jean. Okay.
And Mr. Picton. I think you've had enough for one day, too.
If my secretary says so.
Secretaries have a way of saying such things and making you obey.
Well, I need a drink to wake me up. Oh, I can hardly keep my eyes open.
What brought you here if Doris is so sleepy?
Renshaw.
I thought when in Rome you ought to experience some of the Rome nightlife.
Quite right. Here's the waiter.
Excuse me. Is there a Mr. Hayward in this party?
I'm Hayward.
There is a telephone call for you, Mr. Hayward. This way, please.
Who can that be? Perhaps it's Doris's Aunt Claire.
She doesn't know we're here. Then again, she might have got the message.
We left at reception.
Yes.
Excuse me, madam.
We have put the call on this extension form in this room.
Thank you. Hey, who's speaking? Hello? Hello? Waiter, the phone's dead. Where?
The waiter has gone about his duties.
Balakiev?
The phone call was, what is the word in English? A ruse.
A ruse?
It comes from the old French ruse to get out of the way, no?
In English, it means a trick or a cunning scheme.
Very appropriate to your English intelligence service. They are full of tricks and cunning schemes. For example, they have explained to you what they are trying to achieve here in Rome.
Not fully.
Such wonderful English understatement. Not fully. Not at all, eh? But as if I am any judge. You know nothing about what is going on. They are letting you provoke situations. They spread to catch the mackerel. But you could be eliminated, swallowed, like mackerel devouring whitebait, Haywood.
I see you are a fisherman too, Balakiev.
Ah, you English, you make light of everything and you take too many risks. You should first find out what your assignment involves and how dangerous it is.
Is that what you wanted to get me alone for? To warn me?
Yes, Haywood. I would not want you to come to grief for your aunt's sake.
Such consideration from a KGB colonel.
Oh, have you not heard? We are trying to improve our image. You see, I have already been influenced by your lightheartedness.
Well, whatever your motives, thanks for the warning.
Don't mention it, old boy. One of my weaknesses is liking people, fellow human beings.
I can see Aunt Claire's influence, too. But in your line of business, liking people can be a great weakness.
You, too, at the moment, are in this line of business, Haywood. Good night to you.
Good night.
Juan Haywood.
Yes, Colonel?
I think it has been put around by your superiors that you are in possession of a certain strip of painting.
What?
You see, they have not kept you informed. The left hand does not know what the right hand is doing.
That is the whisper we picked up.
I don't believe it.
You will see. By the way, Haywood, have you been to Leningrad lately?
Leningrad? What are you talking about?
If anyone should ask you that question, you must say, I think St. Petersburg is much more romantic as a name. Now, I will wait here a little longer. You had better rejoin your party.
Haywood, here's your drink. Who's ringing you at this unearthly hour?
Just an old friend.
Cheers. By the way, Mike, you must meet one of the guests, Count Roberto Galateo.
Galateo?
That will be the name, Mr. Haywood.
Oh.
It is a name that has become a proverbial in Italy. You see, one of my ancestors, some 400 years ago, wrote one of the world's lasting books on social behavior, Della Casa Galateo. For anyone whose manners are not what they should be, we say, non conosce il Galateo. He does not know his Galateo.
Who?
Ah, and this is your charming wife. I, Count Galateo, kiss your hand.
A polite reprimand on manners can also be introduced with Monsignor de la Casa Dice.
Ah.
Monsignor de la Casa says.
Quite so. You are an educated English lady, I see.
My convent education took in Della Casa, but the title of the book Galateo was derived from the name of Galeazzo Florimonte, Bishop of Aquino. I remember Sister Elizabeth telling us about him.
Such a rare flower of femininity, beauty, and intellect.
Your flattery will not stop me disclosing the fact that the Della Casa was the author, and as the name Galateo was derived from the bishop Della Casa met in Rome in the 16th century...
I cannot be descended from the author.
Or one of your ancestors did not write one of the lasting books on social behavior, Signore.
You see through my joke. But I am a count of sorts. I make my money by commerce. Tell me, Mr. Haywood, what is your line of business?
A textile.
A textile? I also deal in that.
There is some magnificent Italian material on the market now. I must show it to you. My firm is Fratellini Exports. Here, on my business card, is my address.
Oh, but I am going there now. Why not call on your way back to your hotel? I always keep a few bottles of excellent scotch in my office.
Well, another time, perhaps. It is a little late, and we have no car.
You do have a car, old man. Yes, what? Indeed. I forgot to tell you. I've arranged for you to have one during your stay.
Oh.
I'll have it brought round right away.
Goes like a bomb, old boy. Roman sunshine, it's as good as new. No body rock, engine finely tuned. Who does it belong to? Me, old boy.
Why did you have it brought down specially?
Just listen to that. You can hardly tell the engine's running.
Yeah, I'm impressed. The engine's in good condition. Why has all this been set up for me?
Good question, old boy. You see, we wanted you to come here tonight because we thought someone might make you an offer.
Why should they do that?
Because of the strip of painting you found, perhaps.
What was on the strip of painting?
We're still having it tested. We don't know.
Look, Renshaw,
mm-hmm.
I want to know what's going on. And I'm not getting involved in anything more until there's a thorough briefing.
I'll pass your views on to Rubs.
It looks to me as if I'm being used as bait. A sprat to catch a mackerel.
Who told you that?
Someone in the club, as a matter of fact.
Well, that's impossible.
Then it's not true that I'm being used as bait.
It's utter rubbish, Haywood. It's simply that Galateo deals in textiles. You might learn something about his premises.
Oh? And why should I want to learn anything about his premises?
He deals in so many things and tells so many stories. He obviously wants you to meet him. If you like, I'll come with you. I'll make myself comfortable in the boot. But make sure you don't lock it. No one must see us together.
Isn't there a danger you'll suffocate?
No.
Pity.
The boot has had passengers before. Carried all sorts of things.
I bet it has. All right. I'll give Galateo about 20 minutes start then. But the first thing I'm going to do is seeing Doris safely back to the hotel.
Not the hotel, old boy. We have a place for you. Both of you. A secluded villa. Does that mean you're not going to Fattorini Exports?
It means I might or I might not have time to try out the car you're lending us, Renshaw.
I'm glad you decided to come. Oh, by the way, I would lock your car. Many thieves about these days, and an English sports car is sure to attract their attention.
Very well. These doors, you pull this latch, and when you close it, the door's locked.
That leaves only the boot.
Oh, there's nothing in the boot.
Spare wheel? Tires? Of course, it might be locked already. So it is. Remember to keep doors and boot locked always.
I didn't think I had locked it, as a matter of fact.
Well, you did. This way. As you can see, Mr. Haywood, none of your modern glass or concrete office for me, where the windows rattle every time a car or train goes past. These old buildings are cool and soundproof. We are here. Please, take a seat.
More sumptuous than I expected.
Oh, quite deliberate. They come up the stairs, and then they are pleasantly surprised when they enter.
Your paintings are superior to the faded posters on the stairs. There's your air conditioning.
I like a little creature comfort.
You said you had some textiles to show me.
Not really textiles, Haywood.
Oh?
More textile design. We have an up-and-coming designer by the name of Gatto.
Cat?
Yes. Some of his paintings he signs with a cat.
Not all of them?
No, not all of them. His textile designing he does under another name.
And what name is that, I wonder?
I have a terrible memory for names.
Have you, Mr. Galateo?
Count Galateo. Mr. Haywood.
Oh, I thought that was another of your jokes, like the one about your ancestors.
It is no joke.
Neither is my visit here. I'm sure you didn't invite me to show me textiles, but I am interested in acquiring paintings by Gatto, especially if they're signed Tiberius.
They can be very costly and dangerous paintings. You need capital and organization, and you have to know not only the right people, but the correct things to say.
Such as?
He would... Have you been in Leningrad lately?
I think St. Petersburg is much more romantic as a name.
If you will excuse me for one moment, Mr. Haywood, I have something that should interest you. It is a picture, although not very big, and therefore easier to handle. Here we are. I have it ready, just in case. I will stand it on my desk, and you can look at it from where you are.
You don't trust me?
I don't trust anyone, Haywood. Well, do you like it?
What's it supposed to be?
A good question, Haywood. I know what it shows. The foreground is a cobbled alley looking out on lovely olive groves with the sea below.
Where is it?
Not far from Capri, I think.
Capri?
You seem surprised.
I was thinking of its connections with Caesar Tiberius.
That was not the answer, Haywood.
What do you mean?
That the gun in my hand is of a very heavy caliber. Ideal for making hits.
Where did I go wrong?
Like there was an answer to my question about Leningrad, so there was at the mention of Capri.
Do you intend to kill me?
Anyone who has managed to breach our security has usually ended up
strangled
or with a knife in his back, which is why I also carry one.
Bravo, old boy.
Renshaw.
That was jolly spectacular, Haywood. I arrived to see you leap through the air, kick the gun and knife out of his hands, and finish him off with two beautiful commando blows. Out like a light. But I suggest we get out of here before their reinforcements arrive.
They have a Mercedes! They're trying to block the exit! That's it, Haywood. Drive like the devils in hell went after you. They'll stop at nothing to get a painting back. Make for the river! Let's have some noise from the horns!
I never thought I'd be so glad to see policemen.
An Italian bob, is it not?
I'm sorry we have to separate you and your friend, Mr. Haywood. For a long time, I've been wanting to get my hands on Renshaw. Now I'm looking forward to the interrogation. Cigarette?
No, thanks. I don't smoke.
Very wise. Being a captain of police has pressures which encourage smoking, no?
If you say so.
But how can I give up smoking when I have problems like you, Haywood?
Problems?
I have to charge you with a dozen traffic offenses to start with.
I'll plead guilty.
And what about the murder of Sven Bast?
He had been murdered before we arrived. Or had you forgotten?
By your side or by the other side, Haywood?
Now, that I don't know.
Which almost sounds like the truth. But there is a story going around you were brought in by British intelligence. What better cover than a newly married pair of lovers, a businessman who married his charming secretary?
Well, what was I allegedly brought in to do?
What were Mr. and Mrs. Haywood brought in to do?
Oh, no. She knows nothing about it.
So you do.
She's not involved in any way.
English gallantry is not dead.
It's the truth.
I would like to believe you. I would hate to think of that charming Mrs. Haywood spending a long time in our jail.
She's done nothing. You're bluffing.
Very well. I'm bluffing. I take your word for it that she has done nothing.
You have to take my word. You've no evidence of the contrary.
True, my friend. But I have a better charge.
Better charge?
One I can prove.
Rubbish.
Conspiracy to steal works of art is considered a very serious crime in my country.
Conspiracy?
The painting of the alleyway and the olive groves found in your car.
You're not telling me that was a work of art. Every painting I've seen by Gatto seems out of perspective.
So in great haste, cover up.
Cover up?
Yes, one painting covering another, and that of great value. The view through the alleyway covered up an old master stone from Milano 3 weeks ago. It is valued in excess of $1 million. The going rate for that kind of theft is 20 to 30 years jail. Usually it is very difficult to prove unless you actually catch the thieves in possession of the works. In your case...
You did just that. How convenient.
That is what I was thinking, Mr. Haywood.
Suppose I tell you that I didn't steal it.
That is what they all say. Only you would have to have a better answer still.
Why?
Because your fingerprints are on the frame. You obviously took a firm hold of it and left wonderfully clear impressions. Fingers, thumbs, palms are... Fingerprint experts are quite delighted.
I bet they are.
So, I await your explanation. You're quite sure you would not... like a cigarette.
I would be delighted to have a coffee with you, Claire O'Connell.
I don't remember asking you.
Ah, where is your Christian charity, Claire? Especially after going to morning mass.
So, you're having me followed again, I see.
Your race has survived Cromwell and famines, expulsions and persecutions. I would hate to see such a fine specimen like yourself pass away before your appointed time.
Your Russian-Irish accent is out of this world, Colonel. And so beautifully put, before me appointed time. Oh, bless you. But I have a guardian angel to look after me who'll do a better job than both lots of you.
Both lots of us? Which lot is which lot? Sometimes it is very blurred.
I'm not surprised the way you all carry on. Have a cup of coffee, now. There's a clean cup on the next table here. I just help myself and save the waiter's legs. There, now. You like yours black and strong, as I recall.
Thank you, Claire. But tell me, my favorite militant Christian, how do you know angels exist?
Revelation. From end to end, Scripture is filled with them. And don't we know from our Lord's own words that every child has an angel to guard him? Ah, but you won't have read the New Testament, and neither the Old for that matter.
I know the first Christians were very mindful of spirits they called guardian angels.
And weren't the early Christians on very familiar terms with their guardian angels? When St. Peter escaped from prison, the Acts describe how the angel led him past the guards, how the iron gate leading to the city opened of its own accord.
Chapter 12, dear lady.
You know. You've read them.
Well, as a former interrogator, I had to be widely read. Didn't Peter, realizing that the Lord had sent an angel to deliver him out of Herod's hands, go to the house of Mark's mother?
He did.
A girl called Rhoda came to answer when he knocked at the porch door, and she, recognizing Peter's voice, was too overjoyed to open the gate for him. She ran in and told them that Peter was standing at the gate. Thou art mad, they told her.
But she insisted it was so. And they said it must be his guardian angel.
Meanwhile, Peter went on knocking. And why are you looking at me with your mouth wide open, Claire O'Connell?
Ah, the devil can quote scripture.
And I thought you were impressed.
Perhaps I was. And perhaps I was a little uncharitable. After all, Saul the persecutor became Paul the apostle.
Quite so. And many a Christian lady was married to a pagan husband.
Why your sudden interest in things spiritual? Oh, if I didn't know you as a devious KGB colonel, I could almost mistake it for a proposal. You're not suggesting that a militant Catholic and a militant communist get together, are you? Oh, that sort of ecumenism is ridiculous.
Dialogue. That is the new word, dear lady.
Indeed. And you'll be wanting more than dialogue with me, Colonel, judging by the twinkle in your eye.
Quite so.
But it's impossible. It's out of the question. The pagans let their wives live according to their conscience.
You yourself have quoted Lenin to me. He said it ought to be left to the individual to choose.
Well, why don't you let him?
Opiate of the people.
Oh, that's a deformed Christianity. There are two great divisions in the universe, the world of spirits and the world of matter. It is one of the reasons for man's existence that he locks these two worlds together by belonging to both, to the one by his soul, to the other by his body. Not like two unrelated spheres, but as a figure of eight, with man on both sides of the joint.
Mm-hmm.
He should first be a man, then a saint, developing human virtues that make him a better person and a better citizen.
Let us bring the conversation down to the more primitive earthly. Using the idiom of your corrupt capitalistic pop culture, I fancy you, Claire O'Connell, fine figure of a woman.
Oh, you're a fine figure of a man yourself. But it's completely out of the question.
Why? Russia and Ireland now have diplomatic relations.
But you're not talking about diplomatic relations. I always believe a woman should follow her man and look after him.
A man who has found a vigorous wife has found a rare treasure brought from distant shores. Bound to her in loving confidence, such a man will have no need of spoil. Content, not sorrow, she will bring to him as long as life lasts.
The devil quoting scripture again. Though I must admit, you said it beautifully, and it fair turns me legs to jelly.
I have a fine flat in Moscow.
No.
But why no?
Well, how could I get to morning mass in Moscow? I'm not one to compromise me faith.
But, Claire.
But nothing. As an interrogating persecutor, you studied scripture, and you obviously know quite a bit about theology.
All right, I stop persecuting. I stopped years ago.
And as I said, I'm not one for compromises. There's more in heaven and earth.
I am not asking for compromises.
Oh, yes, you are. Do you know how I feel about the mass?
Claire, how can the wife of a KGB colonel go to mass every day? I would only ask for a little discretion.
If you believe in the Eucharist, it would be illogical not to receive as often as possible. Well, I've known people walk 20 miles to get to the mass.
I give up such intolerance.
Ah, violence coming out now, is it?
You are the violent race.
I'd call it a fighting revolutionary spirit.
Now I know why the state of Ireland is what it has been for more than 800 years, a source of grave anxiety to England.
fanaticism.
And what you're saying sounds like pagan revisionism, so you can kindly take back your offer of cohabitation.
Right now, Claire O'Connell, if you were the last woman on Earth, I would take a vow of celibacy.
Well, I'm glad something will make you relinquish your plans for world domination.
Goodbye! Ah, bush, Samoa! Ah, goodbye!
You've spilled the coffee. Ah. And goodbye stands for God be with you, Colonel.
Mr. Hayward?
Has interrogation time come round again?
This case becomes hourly more interesting, Hayward.
Why? What else are you thinking of charging me with?
You see, you always imagine the worst. Well, not without reason, but...
But what?
You're going to be released.
Released?
I'm glad that you too are surprised. You must have some very influential friends, Mr. Raywood. My instructions from the minister himself are that you can be allowed to go free. Well, not exactly free, but as long as you remain in Roma and Ripoteria, you need not be held in prison.
It must be because you're so romantic, Captain Averna. Simpatico.
Or susceptible to persuasion of all kinds.
You're not happy with the decision?
I would be happier to see you jailed for a very long time, Heywood. And I will do my best to bring it about.
Well, thanks for telling me.
This way.
How are Italian prisons these days?
Lacking certain creature comforts.
We thought we'd better get you out. You see, your Aunt Claire's had a bust-up with Balakiff. It could complicate matters.
You brought her in deliberately, didn't you? You knew Balakiff was here in Rome.
We've taken her to the villa. She's with Doris. We have also explained to Doris about your difficulties.
Pity I missed the explanation, Robson. That would have been quite something.
Apparently, she was sitting up waiting for you to return.
But once again, I wriggled obediently, as good bait should, and did your bidding instead. That, for the record, was the very last time.
Yes, I quite right to feel annoyed and somewhat let down, Heywood.
Somewhat let down? You put me in a position where someone tries to kill me with gun and knife? I'm invited out to dinner to find my host dangling by his neck on a wire. I'm knocked unconscious in the hotel, and I'm shot at in the street. I also face a 20-to-30-year jail sentence for stealing works of art.
I did say you're quite right to feel annoyed.
The understatement of a decade. And I forgot to mention this was a honeymoon holiday provided by you out of gratitude.
Well, things have been rather hectic, Heywood.
Again, Robson, I can only stand open-mouthed in amazement at your remarkable gift for understatement. You've used us, Robson, and you haven't even taken the trouble to put us in the picture.
Very true, what you say. And I think you're entitled to an explanation.
How much of it'll be true and how much pure fabrication?
All the truth and nothing but the truth. But first you need a drink, Heywood. Now, I have another bottle of good local wine. Barbera d'Alba, estate bottle. It's a grape grown widely on the hillsides from Asti to Cuneo. And I'm told Barbera grape produces Piedmont's most popular red wine. This one is as fresh and crisp as a young Beaujolais, meant to be drunk young and cool. I add a little ice. I thought I'd open it only when you arrived, in case you might be tempted to think I'd tampered with it.
How could anyone suspect you of such things, Robson? Anyway, what so stopped you opening it and then recorking?
I'd never do that to wine, Heywood.
In other words, you have greater regard for wine than for people.
I do believe you're trying to provoke me, Heywood. Stiff cork. There. Now, to allay your suspicions, I'll drink mine first.
Cheers.
Suspicion is a terrible thing, which brings me to the subject of the present assignment. The code name is Find Caesar.
Who is Caesar?
That, my dear fellow, is the key to the whole problem. You see, works of art and antiques have been stolen on a vast scale over recent months from all parts of Europe. Britain, France, Italy, Russia. Much of the stuff, worth many millions, has been finding its way to America, north and south, often via Britain. We know some of the people on the fringes, CIA double agents, mafia members.
At first, when quite a miniature treasure house was moved out of Russia, we thought it must have been with the KGB's approval and help. In fact, we suspected it had been masterminded by the KGB in order to embarrass the CIA. But we learned recently the Russians suspected it had been masterminded by the CIA and Mafia to embarrass the KGB and make them look ineffective. Then we also found out the Russians suspected us of lifting their art treasures for the same reason. In short, everyone is suspecting everyone else. And in these days of double agents, it's easy enough to build up a case against all and sundry.
So the KGB suspect they're being undermined, and so do the CIA.
And Her Majesty's Secret Service. It has already led to quite a lot of bloodshed, the picking off of one another's agents. It could be that the situation has been deliberately created by someone to set the Russians, Americans, and British at one another's throats. If that is their aim, they are achieving a certain amount of success.
So why was Sven Bast killed?
Ah, now there is a case in point. Bast has worked for both the Russians and the CIA. He was involved in the vanishing art traders. Both sides could have suspected double cross, or the gang may have thought he was about to leak information.
Mm. He pays you money and he takes your choice.
That's about it. But Her Majesty's government feels the situation is tense, very tense. Another killing could provoke mass retaliation, and who knows how it could escalate. The top priority for the European division is to find who is behind it. Now, we know the leader's code name, Tiberius. He has the same ruthless traits as that ancient emperor. He cleans up after every operation with remarkable speed, leaving no witnesses. The killing is done by knife and strangulation.
So Bast could be one of Tiberius's victims.
Or a deliberate imitation. And to keep the intelligence agencies at one another's throats, he also takes out an agent or two.
Well, why was I involved?
Because Picton's in on it. He's moved stuff to England for them. You know Picton, and are in the same business, textiles. You seemed an ideal choice.
Why wasn't I told this at the beginning?
Because you would never have accepted. Another glass of wine?
Well, just one more. And I want to get back to Doris.
And so you should. Now, you have got nearer to penetrating the organization than anyone. I would hope you would see it through to the end. Cheers.
And the end is?
Finding Caesar Tiberius.
And then?
I will rapidly dispatch him back to his ancestors.
Hmm. Cheers. Hail Caesar. You all speak the same language.
Heywood, what will you have to drink?
What are you drinking?
Polish vodka.
I'll join you. Though one should never mix the grape with the grain.
And how is your good wife? And your Aunt Claire?
Oh, they're both fine.
Good, good. A woman of passionate convictions, your aunt.
She calls it fate.
But she is the type of woman that, if she ever married, would be loyal and faithful to a man to the end.
Oh, till death.
For better or for worse. Marriage should be like a good wine, maturing over the years, developing and deepening. And even if the bottle is shaken by mistake, it can still settle back and continue the process. If an opportunity presents itself, you might let your aunt know my views on this subject.
Oh. You would let her know them yourself?
Certain difficulties have presented themselves.
Robson has put me in the picture.
Good. Did he also tell you that our Tiberius Caesar is about to plan a night of knives to eliminate any weaknesses in his organization? That could mean the CIA having a shootout around the international OK Corrals. I dread to think of the consequences. And so does your Majesty's government of Great Britain.
Rule Britannia.
Robson and I have quite unofficially reached a certain understanding.
Well, I'm all for fostering goodwill among nations, even if only on a temporary basis. What do you want me to do?
We have something Tiberius wants very much. It is a Russian icon that recently vanished, but which has now found its way back into our hands. It is quite priceless, and such are the ways of the acquisitive that several collectors in the United States would give millions to have it in their secret collections.
Does Tiberius know it has been intercepted by its rightful owners?
He knows part of his network has been obliterated, and that what he was waiting for may have got into other hands. Here is a parcel for you. I would start by ringing Fattorini Export.
Heywood. I thought you were in jail.
In a phone box, in fact. It's just that they couldn't bring themselves to disbelieve the word of an English gentleman.
I heard the two rival embassies were bringing a little pressure to bear so that they could take the word of an English gentleman.
Truth breeds trust, Galateo.
Then what true things did you ring me up to tell me, Mr. Heywood?
That I have a package from Russia that should interest you. The price is $2 million, or the equivalent in German marks.
How do we know that you have the goods?
I have color slides, the article on its own, and one with the article resting in my hands. At the moment, however, the icon is in safekeeping.
I will ring you.
Heywood.
This is Harry Carson. Look, I haven't very much time.
The American at the Chat Noir?
Yeah. Listen to me, Heywood.
I'm listening.
Don't keep that appointment that's being made for you. Do you understand? And don't keep the icon either. Have you got that?
Yes, but why not?
Look, I'm in a bar near Campo Fiore. Do you know where that is? I gotta go. Spiders are...
Harry! Oh, damn. Hello.
The price is right. The meeting will be tonight. On the Piazza Cavour, there will be a yellow car parked. In its rear window, there will be a large cat. When the lights are on, the cat's eyes have two red bulbs which illuminate. The car will drive off, and you will follow it.
I want to do business with only Tiberius.
Oh, that is understood. Tiberius will be waiting for your parcel. And, Heywood, along the route, we will check if there are any other cars following. If that happens, you will just drive around, wasting petrol.
How do I know I'll come out alive?
For $2 million, risks are inevitable on both sides. Until tonight, Heywood.
Time for another ride in the boot, Renshaw.
Take it steadier this time.
Oh, and that reminds me, tell me, how was it the boot was locked when Galateo tried it? I made sure it wasn't locked when I closed the lid.
Ah, well, I have a little gadget inside to keep inquisitive people out. Well, let's check our weapons before we move off.
And Renshaw, don't leave it so late this time.
Full magazines and working smoothly. All aboard, then. Oh, I've installed a hearing device, so you can talk to me. Hey, what? In fact, we can both talk to each other.
Ah, very cozy. I'm turning into the piazza now. I can see the yellow car with the red cat's eyes.
Keep well clear of it.
It's beginning to move off.
Then follow it as instructed.
It's traveling at some speed.
All the better.
We're still traveling by the Tiber. We're coming to what looks like warehouses. On the right, a large refuse dump. There's a car. No, a lorry. Oh, it's heading straight for it.
Hello, Heywood. I'm glad to see you're still alive. May I call you?
You won't get it.
I think we have. You see, we've watched your every move, Heywood. We saw you put it into the car. We saw you take on your extra passenger. I'll remove the parcel from the glove compartment. Galateo! Drag Heywood out, then lock the boot. Over here. Don't let him lose consciousness. He wants to meet Tiberius. Don't you, Heywood?
You aren't Tiberius.
No, but Tiberius has come for the painting.
Tiberius has another wish, to kill you personally for all the trouble you have caused.
With this knife.
Give me the knife, Picton. Huh.
You should never let your secretary speak to you like that, Picton. Even if she has delusions of power and is convinced she's Tiberius Caesar.
Bind him!
I suspected at the party at the Chat Noir you were more than a secretary, Miss Jean Tyler. Secretaries are more respectful in public to their bosses. In front of people, they never tell him what to do, even if they attempt it in private.
That is quite correct, Haywood.
I know now what Harry Carson meant just before he was shot down.
We did not kill Carson.
He was about to say something about spiders. The female of the species is deadlier than the male, and usually ends up by eating him.
Hold him still. I'm only going to plunge this knife deep into your heart, Haywood. Like this.
Your villa is just around the corner. Do you think you can get there on your own?
I think so.
It would be better if we didn't need to trespass on property owned by British intelligence.
Are they sticklers for protocol?
I am glad to see you have not lost your sense of humor, Haywood.
Thank you for saving my life. And Redshaw's.
I think he will survive. And I was not saving you, Haywood, but an art treasure belonging to the people of the Soviet Socialist Republic. Or rather, a very good imitation of the original icon.
How did you manage to shoot Tiberius and her cohorts in the darkness?
Haywood, only to you would I tell this. Another irony of our times. It was with your new British Army night sight that happened to come into our possession like daylight in what looks like pitch darkness. Remarkable.
Well, why weren't we covered by British intelligence?
I do believe, my dear Haywood, there was difficulty in getting approval for one of your night sights to be used here. Such is the working of bureaucracy.
So, who was Jean Tyler?
Believe it or not, an English girl who went to America as a dancer. She became a madam for the syndicate, which in turn provided girls for the CIA to work amongst the foreign diplomats.
And spies.
And spies, in order to get them into embarrassing situations. She obviously did very well, and with the help of the syndicate and agents from various sides, formed the biggest art theft organization ever. And, to cover their tracks, they played one intelligence agency against the other.
And Bast and Harry Carson?
Bast had worked for me. With his help, we tracked down some of their people in our territories. They obviously suspected Bast and eliminated him. Carson, he was a Bureau of Narcotics agent who had infiltrated the Mafia drug ring, which in turn had CIA connections, which in turn led him to meet Jean Tyler and to infiltrate her organization. Along the way, the Mafia must have discovered his real identity.
I see. But the shooting of Picton, Jean Tyler, and Galatea...
I think you will find there is a paragraph in the newspapers about an English businessman, his secretary, and an Italian business acquaintance being killed in a car crash. And in a hot country, it is always better to have the bodies cremated as soon as possible. You are disgusted, Haywood. You must realize that if we had hesitated one second longer, Caesar's knife would have entered your heart. Good night, Haywood. May the remainder of your honeymoon be more relaxing and pleasant.
Thank you, Colonel.
Our last day in Rome. Did you know that Aunt Claire had a candlelight supper with Colonel Balaclava last night?
Not another word. The two in question are approaching.
Aunt Claire, come.
Mister, if you don't mind, Doris. As a member of a trade delegation, preferable no rank.
The Colonel businessman is a rare specimen.
But not totally incompatible.
Not as incompatible as me living in Moscow and being allowed to receive the sacraments of Mother Church.
I was trying to tell your aunt that in Poland, party managers go to mass now. I also quoted to her John Pilger of the Daily Mirror that in North Vietnam,
Catholics are among the best communists, but still she will not believe me.
You tell me Monday was Friday if you thought you could get your way. No, I say it's impossible.
I ask only that my fiery, fine figure of an Irish woman thinks it over.
Don't you dare attempt to pinch me, or else I won't give the outrageous idea a second thought. Now, come on, Boris. We have 3 hours before the plane, and I still haven't done the stations. And we're going to make them the Irish way, in our bare feet.
Darling.
Yes.
It's a terribly mercenary thought, but I wonder how much Time magazine would pay for the picture of a Russian KGB colonel doing the stations in his bare feet.
Such double-dealing thoughts should never cross an innocent mind. Pity we didn't bring a camera with us, though.
I was reading the other day that as well as being the centre for the Catholic Church, Rome in the last few years has become the espionage capital of Europe, with Arab, Israeli, Western and communist networks.
We can't believe the things you read in the newspapers these days, Doris.
It was in a woman's magazine. Another article said, some men are boys at heart and thrive on danger and excitement. But I think this stay in Rome has done us both good.
Well, my bruises have healed nicely in the sunshine.
And I have some other good news for you, Michael Haywood. You're going to be a father. What? We'll have 4 boys and 3 girls. Well, that thought might keep you out of trouble in the future.
The Knight of Caesar's Knives was written especially for radio by William Keenan, with Anna Cropper as Doris and John Bennett as Michael Haywood. The part of Aunt Claire was played by Elizabeth Kelly, Renshaw by Geoffrey Matthews, Gerald Picton, Ronald Herdman, Sven Bast and Count Galateo by Geoffrey Wheeler, Captain Averno of the Rome Police, Peter Bell, Colonel Boris Balakev of the KGB by David Marlowe, Robson of British Intelligence, Geoffrey Banks, Harry Carson, Graham Tennant, and Jean Tyler, Mara Stowell. The theme music was composed by Matthew Camison, with variations arranged by David Fleming Williams. The mandolins were played by Wilfred Darlington. Knight of Caesar's Knives was produced in Manchester by Trevor Hill.